Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, appropriately enough, Michael Cutler. Always great to join you at the end of the week. Play that inevitable game of catch-up, and indeed there is always, I have to say, unfortunately, all too often too much to catch up with. Today is November 28th, the day after Thanksgiving, Turkey Day. And really, I think probably Turkey Day should remind all of us of Washington, D.C., home of some of the world's biggest turkeys. I mean, goodness gracious, we're getting hammered by both sides of the aisle, but we'll get into that in a bit. But first of all, for those of you not familiar with my program, you should know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Pardon me. An agency that has been sliced and diced, folded into DHS, a major government agency that I have come to refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender rather than the Department of Homeland Security. There is so much wrong with what our government is purportedly doing on our behalf that there is no way that any sane, rational, or intelligent person could think that we are being made secure by the fools on the Hill who run our government. I mean, it's an utter outrage to believe otherwise. sheer madness, folks, inaction. And in fact, the emphasis on immigration has been so diluted that ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is gradually and steadily being supplanted by a new creation, an agency known as HSI, Homeland Security Investigations. God forbid the word immigration even be raised in conjunction with national security. You cannot make this stuff up. But in any event, my mission ever since 9/11 has been to get my voice heard by as many of our fellow Americans, by as many of our supposed leaders, whether they reside in Washington, D.C., or in state capitals or city halls from coast to coast and border to border. And that is why this program exists. And this is what I have been doing ever since those towers fell in lower Manhattan, ever since that airplane came down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and ever since the Pentagon was hit by an airliner. At any event, let me give you three websites that I very much, or four websites that I would very much like for you to visit. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, for many years, I'm proud to say that I have been affiliated with a terrific bunch of folks out in California, in Santa Barbara, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. And don't let that name CAPS, Californians, throw you off. The issues that they have been steadily raising about immigration and related issues really impact the whole country. What we've seen in California is happening in every state from coast to coast, border to border. And I have been writing for them for quite a few years now as a senior fellow, happy to work with them, because this is about protecting America and Americans, irrespective of race, religion, ethnicity. Nothing racist about our immigration laws. In fact, the only distinction that our immigration laws make is a distinction that all too many of our politicians and supposed journalists and certainly folks with an axe to grind or money to be made don't want us to have. And that distinction is between being a United States citizen, being a lawful immigrant, being a non-immigrant lawfully present in the United States, and being an illegal alien. So that's the focus of my program. We do occasionally venture off into other areas, but my primary focus is immigration and all of its myriad facets and the ways that it impacts our country. And so I've been doing that for CAPS. Lately, I am also proud to tell you that I've become a columnist for another fabulous organization, the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I write for Front Page Magazine as one of their columnists, and in fact was privileged to travel with them November 13th to beautiful, sunny West Palm Beach, Florida. There's a pattern here. You know, I live in New York, and in the winter we get hammered, and we're getting some cold weather now. Californians, a population stabilization located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara. Amazing climate right on the water. Then you get down to West Palm Beach, as I did on the 13th of this month. Again, at the Breakers Hotel, fabulous hotel, wonderful event. But for me, the biggest privilege was to be involved in a panel discussion on immigration, not surprisingly, with one of the very few people in the U.S. Senate who I have tremendous respect for, a gentleman by the name of Jeff Sessions, the Republican senator from Alabama. If you know me well, you know I'm registered as a Republican. I've always voted as an independent. I think both parties are toxic. Certainly neither party looking out for the average American, not in this day and age, folks. But I'm registered as a Democrat, but I will vote for anybody who understands the significance of border security and effective immigration law enforcement, who stands with America and American workers and their families. And high on that list, way up on that list in the United States Senate, is this gentleman, Jeff Sessions. He's quoted me from the floor of the Senate on a number of occasions when I referred to comprehensive reform as the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. So to join Jeff was unbelievable. And additionally, Louis Gohmert was part of that panel discussion, along with Congressman John Fleming. And interestingly, Congressman Louis Gohmert from Texas, Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama, and Congressman Steve King, another guy that I have tremendous respect for, from Iowa, deputy chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee in the House, at least that was the title they gave him, a man I've had many private meetings with, who truly stands with us on these critical issues, also participated in a film that I want everybody to see. Take out your crayons, take out your pens and pencils. The Border States of America, produced by the Tea Party Patriots. I'm very proud to have been interviewed for that film. So those three gentlemen, myself, a number of ranchers, a number of sheriffs, some Border Patrol folks interviewed for this film. As they filmed all the way from Texas to Arizona, they being my good friend Mark Hager, history professor from North Carolina, they filmed all the way from Texas to Arizona, and really showing that our border isn't even a speed bump in many places. I mean, it's unbelievable. And yet, we hear the steady nonsense coming from supposed journalists, from reporters who work for a variety of news outlets, making these outrageous statements. Oh, the border is secure, the illegals aren't coming, there's no reason for them to be here. Yeah, there was a surge, but we got over it, it's done with. If you believe that story, folks, wow, make sure you don't flunk the wiggle test. If you don't know what the wiggle test is, I will tell you what it is. Take the test, let me know how you make out. You stick your left finger in your left ear, you stick your right finger in your right ear, you wiggle your fingertips. If they touch, you have flunked the test. If you believe that the illegal aliens are slowing down, you can forget about it. On, I believe it was November 20th of this year, when Obama stood there and said, I'm going to give 5 million illegal aliens lawful status for a 3-year period, giving a gift, I might add, 3 years is an interesting number, a year into the administration of whoever wins the presidential election. With all the kvetching, with all the whining Obama has been doing about George W.'s administration, he is bestowing a train wreck on whatever future president will occupy the Oval Office. So he's making sure that whoever gets into the presidency will face a year of lunacy created by this administration to give at least 5 million, and I think the number may be higher, 5 million illegal aliens, temporary lawful status, Social Security cards, identity documents, no face-to-face interview, no field investigation. What could possibly go wrong? And we're going to dig into that topic in a bit. But in any event, that was why I was so happy after all this happened, or actually I was in Florida before this happened, but we were talking about the potential damage that such action could have. And then, of course, Obama did what Obama does best, throws America a humongous curveball. I mean, it was unbelievable. I'm still sitting here scratching my head. And in fact, it was the topic of a conversation that I had on Neil Cavuto's program earlier today. Neil was, I guess, taking a four-day weekend. Charles Payne was filling in for Neil. I've never been on the air with Charles before. It was fun doing the program. It was a good interview, I thought. So we got into a little bit about Obamacare and how it impacts American jobs. And then, of course, it was an easy step to transition from that to what the president has been doing, not for us, folks, but to us. So Front Page Magazine is another place where you can find my writings. I also have an article in this month's edition, or this quarterly edition, the winter edition, the fall edition of the Social Contract quarterly publication. I've been writing for them for a bunch of years. I'm now working on a piece for the winter edition. And finally, I have been writing some articles, and I just did a policy brief for an organization known as Progressives for Immigration Reform, PFIR. That's all you got to put into Google, PFIR. You will get to their website. You will be able to see my policy brief that I entitled The Liberal Case for Effective Immigration Law Enforcement. They are progressives. They are very liberal. But they understand that this issue of immigration, of border security, of jobs for Americans has nothing to do with left or right, but about right or wrong. Very simple. I don't know how on earth people in this country have been bamboozled into believing that only right-wing nuts care about who's coming into our country, that only right-wing nuts would care about jobs for Americans or the potential for disease or crime or narcotics coming into the United States. It's insulting. It's outrageous. But it's one of the many lies being told by liars who are profiting off of this. That's what this is truly about. It's liars who are making money and don't give a damn what happens to America or Americans as a consequence, as long as they keep on shoveling money into their bank accounts. And they will do anything and everything to be able to shove more money into their bank accounts by exploiting foreign workers, by driving down the wages of American workers. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. So let's dispel that myth that this is about right-wing conservatives who are xenophobic. Okay? If you go into the immigration laws, there's nothing there, absolutely nothing, that makes any distinction about people by race, religion, or ethnicity, only by the question, very simply, are you a citizen or are you an alien? And that's why the word alien has been all but stricken from the vernacular, with one exception. With one exception. The word alien suddenly became so palatable when it was linked to the DREAM Act, because the A in DREAM Act, alien minors. Suddenly, alien became palatable and acceptable, but you can only use it in that one word. Could you imagine, and you know, I admit right up front, I probably use stronger language than some folks, but I do. But the one rule that I have in my family, the one rule in my own personal life, is you will never hear me use the N-word or any version thereof, because any word that insults, demeans, humiliates, another human being is utterly unacceptable. That's the real hate speech to me. The F word, that stuff, I don't really care. We're adults. I don't get inflamed about it. I'm going to sound a little bit like George Carlin, and you may disagree with me, and that's fine. And by the way, that's another important issue, the First Amendment and the right that Americans have to disagree with one another. We're adults. We are citizens of a nation that prides itself on the Constitution and on freedom of speech. What does that mean? It means that we can disagree, but it doesn't mean that if we disagree, you're my enemy. It just means we are fellow Americans with a different perspective, with different ideas, with different priorities. The vilification of Americans by other Americans is ripping this country right down the middle. We are being factionalized, you know, left versus right, black versus right, black versus white, the Latino vote. The Latino vote. By the way, is that an outrageous concept that Latinos vote as blocks, Jews vote as blocks, blacks vote as blocks, Catholics? this idea that we can divide up Americans and stick us into little cubby holes, like little widgets, is what profiling is all about. The same journalists who scream bloody murder, "Don't you dare, whoa, that police officer, how could he profiled?" Never mind that in profiling, that law enforcement officer took more than appearance into account. There's something known as behavioral profiling. And by the way, the Israelis have gotten very good at using behavioral profiling to keep terrorists and wackaloons off of their airliners. It's a form of profiling. But it's about a lot more than looking at someone's last name or skin color. How is the person reacting? Is he or she nervous? How are they dressed? I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into that business of profiling when you're looking at behavioral profiling. But when some journalist who goes bananas because some cop supposedly may have profiled can then turn from that story and then next talk about how the president or a member of Congress or some mayor or governor is seeking to attract the Latino vote, you know, you want to bang your head against the wall. Do you mean to tell me that you really believe that everybody whose last name is Rodriguez votes the same way? Everybody whose name is Garcia votes the same way? Every Goldstein votes the same way? It's disgusting. It's insidious. It's infuriating. I mean, does that mean that all Latinos support violating laws, that all Latinos are thrilled that our borders are wide open to drugs and competing workers can come flowing across the border? Really? I mean, it infuriates me. It's insulting to everybody. And I can tell you that in my travels around the country, I've met many Latino Americans who are pissed. They say, wait a minute. How in the world can they say that the Latino vote wants millions of people who snuck in to get green cards or get lawful status or, God forbid, citizenship? And then they start telling me the story about how their family came to America legally, how they did everything properly, and how they're thrilled that they're American citizens, and they see people doing what they're doing now as being vile and reprehensible. You know, my mother was an immigrant, by the way, folks. She came here from Poland ahead of the Holocaust. I'm Jewish. I was named for my grandmother, who was slaughtered in Poland during the Holocaust. So we hear these journalists and the politicians, oh, we want the Latino vote. Meanwhile, if you look at the survey of what happened in this last election, 16%, I believe, was the percentage of Latinos who even thought immigration was a significant issue. 16%. 49% believed that the number one issue was the economy. And if people really understood immigration, they would understand the nexus between immigration and the economy, and national security, and public health, and unemployment and underemployment, and quality of health care, and quality of education, and environmental issues. But that's not the way it's being portrayed for the most part. There is a mythology. If you want the Latino vote, then you got to be for amnesty. And most of our elected representatives, not all, there are some true leaders, some truly bright people out there. My friend Lou Barletta, former mayor of Hazleton, member of Congress, is a leader. Lou is absolutely a leader. Senator Jeff Sessions, Senator Chuck Grassley, Senator David Vitter, Louis Gohmert in Congress, Steve King in Congress. These guys are leaders. These are leaders. But you have a lot of scared little rabbits running around. Oh, my gosh, if I say I'm against comprehensive reform, oh, I'm going to lose that vote. Oh, my gosh. Listen, if those people had gonads, if they had a real spine, they would stand up and say, listen, a politician is a leader. I'm going to get in front of the microphones, and I'm going to explain to the constituents in my district, in my state, in my city, whatever office we're talking about, I'm going to explain to them that the reason we have immigration laws is to prevent the entry of aliens who would be harmful to America or Americans. For the first 4 years of my 30-year career, I was an inspector assigned to John F. Kennedy International Airport. When I provided a declaration in support of Arizona when they were outrageously sued by the Department of Justice over SB 1070, their immigration bill, I said that for the first 4 years of my career as an inspector at that port of entry, I had my eye to the peephole on America's front door. You're not antisocial if you lock your door at night. You're not antisocial if when someone rings the bell, you ask them, who's there? You'd be a damn fool to open the door without looking. As kids, we were taught that by our parents. Don't open the door to a stranger. Make sure you know who's on the other side of the door. In fact, when we first start leaving our children alone at home for an hour or 2 hours, we tell them, you know, stay in your room. If someone knocks on the door, don't even answer the door. Don't even knock. Just let them knock and don't let them in. Because we're afraid they might let the wrong person in. Immigration is no different, folks. We live in a dangerous world. ISIS has beheaded Americans. And President Obama made note of it between trips to the golf club. I mean, it was remarkable to me to watch the president give a talk about an American having his head chopped off who did nothing to encourage or invite that disaster befalling him and ultimately his family, made his little speech and went out and went golfing. I mean, the image of that still blows my mind. It blows my mind that a citizen of the country that you took an oath to protect had his head chopped off by enemies, and you're golfing. I guess you could say Obama's handicap has now become America's handicap. But in any event, the same people that chopped off the heads of those Americans and the Brit, the people from ISIS, have made it clear, we're coming to America. We're going to do it to you on your home turf. And then you look at a recent New York Post article that said DHS admits that they can't stop ISIS from coming to America. There was an article in the National Review quoting Duncan Hunter when he spoke to Greta Van Susteren on her program saying, pardon me, that he had interviewed some Border Patrol agents. And the agents told him that they had stopped 10 individuals associated with ISIS from entering the United States, and it was their belief that if they could stop 10 of these bums, that many others had gotten through. They're here. And so now Obama comes along and says, I'm going to take millions of illegal aliens who snuck into the United States, and I'm going to give them all official identity documents. I'm going to give them all Social Security cards, and I'm going to give them the authority to work in the United States legally. It blows my mind. So now the discussion that we had today on Neil Cavuto's program when I was with Charles Payne, Charles asked me, he said, well, now look at what's happening. Because of the way that Obamacare has been written, illegal aliens are not supposed to be covered by Obamacare. So any company that hires aliens who would get temporary lawful status because of the way the law is written would not be covered under Obamacare. So their employers basically get a $3,000 per head bonus if they hire these aliens who get temporary lawful status as compared with an American worker or a lawful immigrant worker. $3,000 per worker. If you have a company and you employ 10 people, that's $30,000 a year. If you have 100 people, that's $300,000 a year, right into your pocket that you're saving by not hiring an American. This is insanity. This is a level of madness and betrayal that you cannot make up. And, you know, every politician, and they don't care if they run for dog catcher or mayor or president, they all say the same things. I'm going to create the jobs. I'm going to create the jobs. And I know my conservative friends will say, oh, government doesn't create jobs. I don't really agree with that. You know, when we decided to go to the moon, think of how many companies hired thousands of engineers, technicians, scientists, metal workers, machinists, and so forth to make that trip to the moon possible. Government can very definitely cause people to be hired. And government does hire people. Government is a big employer. So when they say, well, government doesn't create jobs, I'll tell you one thing, though, that both sides can agree on, and we don't even have to debate this one, folks. It's about government liberating jobs. By effective immigration law enforcement, by imposing effective border security measures to keep the flow of illegal aliens down to an absolute minimum, perhaps by ending the visa waiver program once and for all. What we could do is liberate the jobs and make certain that only those folks who are entitled to work in the United States would actually get a job. So when I hear this nonsense that government doesn't create jobs, that's ridiculous. If the government is working as it's supposed to work for we the people, then this is what they would do. But it's very obvious that's not who they're working for. Take our good friend Chuck Schumer. Maybe your friend, not my friend. He might be my senator, used to be my congressman, but never my representative. Chuck Schumer was a huge advocate for Obamacare. He was out there on the stump howling, oh, this is great, the American people need it, this is fabulous, this is terrific. And now all of a sudden, because he saw what happened with the election, and Schumer is nothing if he's not an astute politician, because that's what he is. He's been a politician his whole life. That's the only job he's ever had, politician, with all that you might think of that term. Suddenly realizes, oh, this is bad. The American people aren't happy with Obamacare. All these failures of Obamacare. Even the president is trying to say, well, you know, this was wrong and that was wrong. So Chuck Schumer, I was on with Charles Payne today, and I said, you know, if backpedaling was an Olympic sport, Chuck Schumer could compete for a gold medal in backpedaling. So he was backing away from Obamacare and says, well, the American people, the middle class, they're really upset because what they want are jobs. They want jobs. Okay, hold that thought. Now, what's the next thing that Schumer has done recently? Well, a couple of weeks ago, Chuck Schumer got in front of the cameras. I mean, hard to imagine Chuck Schumer getting in front of a TV camera. I know it stretches belief, but he did it. He got in front of the TV cameras, and Chuck Schumer said, we've got a real problem. And what's the problem? People trespassing on the Brooklyn Bridge. They took down the flag. They trespassed on the Manhattan Bridge, and they put up the Palestinian flag. We had guys trespass to the top of the New World Trade Center tower and do what's known as a base jump. You know, they jumped off and then pulled the ripcord on their parachutes. He said, this is dangerous, and, you know, maybe they don't think they're doing anything harmful, but it's very dangerous, and you never know who they are. We live in a dangerous world, dangerous era. They're endangering public safety, these people who are jumping off the towers and doing these other things. He said, and you know why they're doing it? And CBS News reported on this, by the way. He said they're doing it because the penalty, even if they're caught, is minimum. The most they're looking at is a year in jail. And they're not going to get a year in jail. They're going to get 3 months in jail, if anything. So there's no deterrent against people trespassing on New York City landmarks. Given the concerns of the era, you know, terrorism and all that other stuff, we need to crack down on people who would trespass on our landmarks. And you know what Chuck Schumer suggested? It was a brilliant idea. I mean, he's completely right. I'm actually agreeing with him. I'm not saying this tongue-in-cheek. I only wish he was listening to his own words. He said the way you stop people from trespassing is put them in jail for 5 years. Think about how stiff a sentence 5 years is. So there's Schumer in front of the camera saying, I'm going to propose legislation that if someone trespasses on a landmark, they're looking at 5 years in jail. You know what, Chuck? You're right. I guarantee you, if the penalty was 5 years and you publicized it and you just have to lock up one or two people and drop a safe on their head, everybody else, all these other yo-yos are going to look at that and say, wow, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to go to jail. He's right. However, same Chuck Schumer, as part of the Gang of Eight, or as I prefer to call them, the eight gangsters, what did he say? When you trespass on the United States, however, you earn the pathway to United States citizenship. The disconnect blows my mind. How on the one hand, Chuck can say, trespass on the Brooklyn Bridge, climb those ropes up there, get to the top and mess with that flag, you're going away for 5 years. Sneak into America, evade the inspections process, you've earned citizenship. Never mind that we give 1 million people green cards from around the world every year. Never mind that we naturalize hundreds of thousands of new citizens every year. Well, what I'd like to know is why we bother spending all that money on the legal system when Chuck and all these others in Washington, Boehner included, McCain included, Lindsey Graham included, we can go down the list, both sides of the aisle, not left or right, folks, both sides could care less about the American worker. Let's be blunt about it. And without realizing it, perhaps, could care less about national security. The purpose of the inspections process conducted at ports of entry is very similar to what the TSA does. And by the way, if you start that TSA process and try to get out of there, see how quickly you wind up getting handcuffed and prosecuted. And would any sane person get on an airplane if they saw somebody sneak past TSA? Of course not. As I jokingly say when they do some speaking events, nobody wants a window seat or an aisle seat, for that matter, on a cruise missile, right? But yet, what are we being told? Oh, when people run the border, no big deal. They entered undocumented, whatever that means. They entered undocumented. Well, undocumented means they either don't have or don't want you to see official identity documents. There's no way of verifying their true name, their country of citizenship, or when they got here. All unknowns. All unknowns. But yet, somehow, when aliens run the border, it's acceptable. Never mind that process that's supposed to keep out, and I'll give you the categories. Aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Aliens who are severely mentally ill and are violent or sex offenders. Aliens who are part of gangs or gun-running organizations or engage in money laundering or arson or murder. We'll go right down the list of all the crimes. Aliens who are human rights violators, spies, criminals, or terrorists. That's who's on the list. Those are the categories. It's okay. Doesn't matter. You were just strolling across the border. It's cool. We'll give you citizenship. Thank you so much for coming. Are you crazy? Are you crazy? So we have our leaders from the White House to the halls of Congress telling people around the world, we don't care how you get here, just get here. A year ago, this past March, I testified before the House Judiciary Committee on the issue of creating a proper immigration system worthy of American values. And I said that by doing all these things, by making all these statements, by proposing this legislation, all these politicians from Obama on down have fired the starter's pistol for aspiring illegal aliens from around the world. And for these aspiring illegal aliens, the finish line is the border of the United States. The finish line is the border of the United States. And I defy anybody to tell me I'm getting it wrong. And then if you look at the immigration laws, there's something interesting. There is a civil rights component to immigration laws. If you deny a person a job who is lawfully entitled, because he or she has an accent, because he or she is an alien, not a citizen, if you establish a pattern of that, you can be prosecuted for violating civil rights. And those of us who watch the criminal justice system know that civil rights violations are serious stuff. This isn't insignificant. This isn't jaywalking. You can spend years in jail when you mess with someone's civil rights. And by the way, I agree with it. I agree with it. Without civil rights, you can't have a democracy. Civil rights includes freedom of speech, by the way, and I'm sure there are politicians that would wish I would shut up, but that's not going to happen. They'd wish a lot of people would shut up. That's why they've gone after talk radio. Civil rights are okay when it works to their advantage. When it doesn't work to their advantage, not so much. Both sides of the aisle. Both sides of the aisle. But you can be prosecuted, you can be fined, and you could be sued if an employee or a potential employee applies for a job and can make a case that the reason they weren't hired was because they had an accent or whatever. In fact, if you scrutinize their documents a little bit too closely, when you hire somebody and you fill out that I-9 that goes along with the hiring of a new employee, you can be found to have committed something, you won't believe the term, but it's called document abuse. I kid you not, document abuse. So look at those documents, make a good faith effort, but don't look too closely because if you take out that jeweler's loop, that guy may say to you, or that gal may say, oh, you know, this guy was you know, I felt uncomfortable. He made me feel like he was treating me differently. But you know how you can treat someone differently and they get away with it? If we're dealing with an American citizen who has no perceivable accent and you hire aliens over that person, there is absolutely no penalty that can be invoked. None. Then it's okay. I just didn't hire the guy. Why not? I don't know. I didn't hire him, but I hired this other guy. The insanity is that our immigration laws were originally passed to protect American workers and their jobs, American lives. That's why we have immigration laws. Prior to the Second World War, as I noted on Cavuto's program today, the immigration laws were administered and enforced by the Labor Department. That's how we built the middle class. So look what's happening. The members of Congress, happy to take campaign contributions from the likes of Gates and Zuckerberg and the United States Chamber of Commerce, keep on expanding the number of H-1B visas, even as Silicon Valley fires American workers. Dan Rather did a report on it, by the way. Dan Rather's report was called No Thanks for Everything. He interviewed computer programmers who were incredibly competent, who had done the job for many years. One woman was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, MBA computer science, prior vice president of a Wall Street bank, worked for Microsoft for years, came to work one day and they said, "You're out of here." Wouldn't give her a reference, which is the other strategy, so Americans don't get the jobs. This is about de-qualifying Americans. Right? The Americans who have the can-do spirit, nah, we don't want Americans. We'd rather get people from India. When you think about money being wired out of the United States, globally, it's India that gets the greatest amount of money, between 60 and 70 billion, with a B, got wired to India by their foreign workers last year. China comes in second, Mexico comes in third. It's not just about the scut jobs. And by the way, manual labor jobs are jobs Americans do better than anybody, provided you pay them a living wage. This is about not paying a living wage. This is about a race to the bottom. Now, what's interesting about all this? Atlantic City is having financial difficulties. Guess why? Because Atlantic City doesn't generally get clientele who fly around the world in private jets. They may occasionally, but their bread and butter clientele, customers, patrons, are blue collar and middle class workers. If you haven't noticed it, folks, we are eating up the middle class and spitting it out. Wages are in a state of decline. Meanwhile, prices are going up, except for gasoline, thank God. For now. But basically, food and all the other stuff that we need, the sustenance of life, prices are going up, not down. Wages are going down. Family incomes are now roughly what they were 20 years ago, according to recent statistics. Nobody has disposable income within the middle class. Disposable income is going away. So who is going to go to Atlantic City when people can't even pay to have, you know, cable television, when they've got to start to make decisions about whether or not they can keep their house warm enough in the wintertime or maybe skip a meal, where people can't pay for medication? So when you look at the extreme pressure that the middle class is under, you look at how many Americans aren't working, and we hear this obscenity. Oh, unemployment rate is at 5.8%. You know, the chutzpah to even make a statement like that. 5.8%, ladies and gentlemen? Really? When you're not counting tens of millions of Americans who are of working age but not working, or are working but are working for much less than they used to earn? What in the world are we talking about? You know, this is the kind of nonsense that we used to attribute to Russia, you know, the days of Pravda and Izvestia. Today we've got MSNBC and the New York Times. You know, I once said that the New York Times should change their slogan from "all the news that's fit to print" to "you'll have a fit from what we print." I mean, how on earth can anybody with a straight face talk about a 5.8 unemployment percent rate and ignore tens of millions of unemployed Americans, and even more underemployed Americans? It's a lie. It's a big, fat, juicy lie. The numbers are way higher, and when you get to America's black communities, and you get to America's Latino communities, the numbers are even higher. And when you look at the violence that results from the drugs flowing across the border, go back to that film that I told you about when I first started my program this evening, The Border States of America. You can find it online for free. Now, if you watch it, I do ask, as they suggest, that you make a contribution because they spent a ton of money. This film costs six figures to produce. Nick Searcy, the actor, is the narrator. It's a beautiful production. I'm in a bunch of documentaries, and no disrespect to the other filmmakers, I think this is the best one I've ever been in. And they're very clear about it. The Border States of America. Please go look online, and you'll be able to watch it. One American News Network, and I'm on programs on that station occasionally, too. Perhaps this week I may be on again with them again. They actually ran the film last weekend a couple of times. So please go watch it. But understand that the impact that this is having, drugs are flowing into the U.S. The money that results from the drug trade is filling the bank accounts of terrorist organizations as well as criminal organizations. And we're told the borders are secure. It's lie after lie. The unemployment rate is down. I mean, when Nancy Pelosi could stand there, and I was in a state of rage, and I remind you, I'm registered as a Democrat, but I couldn't believe what was coming out of her mouth and that nobody said a word about it. You all remember what she said. She was talking about Obamacare and said, you won't know what's in the bill till after they vote for it. How in the world would anybody buy any product that way? Could you imagine going into a car dealership and you say to the guy, I need to buy a car? And the guy says, okay, I'll sell you a car. And in fact, we happen to have a car in the corner of the showroom. It's under a tarp. You can't see it. Can't let you peek under that tarp. I'm sorry, but I assure you it's got four tires. It's got an engine and a transmission. I don't know if it has two doors or four doors. I don't know if there's a sunroof. I don't know what kind of stereo it has. I don't know if it's a stick shift or an automatic. I don't know how many cylinders. I'm not really sure about fuel economy or emissions. I'm not even sure what we're going to have to charge you for the car. But that's not a problem. Just sign your name here. We will deliver it to your driveway. And once it's in your driveway and it's yours to keep forever, then we will tell you how much you're going to have to pay for it. And then you get to see what features it has. Do you know any crazy person, let alone a sane person, who would buy a car that way? Or a refrigerator? Gee, I don't know if it's got an ice machine. I don't know if it's two doors or one door or three doors. I don't know if it has a pull-out drawer. But we'll deliver it, and I'm not sure about the color either. But that should be okay. You'll like it. Would you buy a refrigerator that way? This is madness. This is madness. This is the same Pelosi, the same bunch of politicians in Washington who love to grill somebody. Oh, we got you now. Oh, you did such and such wrong. And they're on their high horses galloping around, charging into the camera's view. But she turns around and turns this nonsense, this charade, into something that they sold to their supposed colleagues on the Hill, and the Americans thought it was great. Look, I'm not an expert on healthcare, but we can see the impact of Obamacare. We saw it today in terms of this $3,000 bonus, if you will, that employers will have, this incentive for not hiring American workers. Right off the bat, you know this thing is a turkey, and I know this was just Thanksgiving. So it's issue after issue dumped down our throats as the politicians and the special interest groups lie through their teeth. You know, I could see Pelosi and Obama and Chuck Schumer and John McCain, all these guys, both sides of the aisle, getting up in front of a room filled with hungry mice and telling them that the best way to get a meal is to eat it off a mousetrap. You don't feed mice by putting cheese on that mousetrap, but they would do it. They would do it. And maybe Gruber was right. Maybe we are so damn stupid that we would think that this was an act of compassion to put cheese on a mousetrap and claim you're there to feed hungry mice. The average American has no idea which end is up, but let Apple announce a new iPhone or a new iPad or some other company announce some new product, and these folks will wait online for days. These are adults, supposedly. Really? I've come to think of American adults as really being children in suits. The American people need to wake up. We need to understand what's really happening. What is happening is that we're being sold out by our own government. We're being sold out by our own government. Alan Greenspan was very clear about his idea about income equality. You know, he went before Chuck Schumer's subcommittee in the United States Senate on April 30th, 2009, and talked about income equality. And, you know, today everybody's jumping on this income equality bandwagon. It's like a Rorschach. Everybody thinks, oh, well, if we have income equality, I'll make more money, kind of like Bill Gates. No, you won't. If we have the income equality that Chuck Schumer and Alan Greenspan and all these other thugs want, you'll be making about the same amount of money as the people down the block who are on welfare. Income equality is about the wage premium. This is what Greenspan referred to, the wages of skilled American workers. And the word skilled, by the way, goes back to the immigration law. That's why they use the word skilled. Skilled workers are programmers, engineers, STEM people, science, technology, engineering, and math. Skilled workers, he said, were earning this wage premium because Americans aren't being made to compete with foreign workers. Well, guess what, boys and girls? They're not supposed to. Americans are supposed to be shielded from foreign workers. We're supposed to be shielded from terrorists. We're supposed to be shielded from aliens with dangerous diseases. We're supposed to be shielded from criminals from other countries and the influx of drugs, narcotics. Our border is our shield, as is our immigration laws. And in fact, I wrote an article about this for Front Page Magazine, that Obama's way of fixing our broken immigration system is to order shields down. Shields down at one of the most dangerous times in the history of this great republic. And where are the Republicans, with the exception of Jeff Sessions? All the howling, oh, my God, you know, he's acting unconstitutionally. Obama's usurping authority. We wanted to do this with him, but he won't let us do it with him. That's what they're saying. See, the real question that should be asked is, could the Republican Party not only sue Obama, but seek an injunction, seek a temporary restraining order? That's the question that should be asked. No one's asking it. No one's asking it, because I'm going to tell you what my hunch is. Boehner wants to give millions of aliens lawful status, but he doesn't want his fingerprints at the crime scene. So what does he do? He screams about Obama. They use it as a campaign issue, as a wedge to gain power in Congress, and they were very successful. But do you think he really wants to stop Obama? He doesn't want the aliens to get citizenship because they'll probably vote for the Democrats. But lawful status, sure. Displace American workers, fabulous. But let's go back to what I said about Atlantic City. If these idiots succeed in killing the middle class, and they've really wounded the middle class terribly. If a middle class bleeds to death and dies, many companies will go bankrupt along with the middle class because they will have lost their consumer base. These people are in a feeding frenzy, not like a shark or ravenous tumor. You know, cancer has an insatiable appetite for nutrients, so much so that cancer will secrete hormones so that the body grows all kinds of blood vessels so the tumor can bathe itself in nutrients. And that cancer is the most successful, becomes the de facto organ in the victim's body, the most successful organ in the body. It gets all the nutrients, and it grows faster than anything else in that body, and it starves off all the healthy tissue, and the cancer does really, really well right up until the day the victim dies, and then the cancer dies with the victim. These idiots in corporate boardrooms around America, or the rest of the world, because most of these companies really aren't American companies, they have a little flag on there on the packaging. Oh, we're going to make people think that we're an American company. Yeah, right. They don't pay taxes. They offshore the jobs. They import foreign workers, but they're an American company. Right. I got another bridge to sell you. But what they don't get is that at some point, they're going to run out of customers, and they will have warehouses filled with the crap that they're cranking out, hoping to dupe idiotic Americans into buying. And the Americans would still buy it, but they don't have any money for it anymore. They are destroying everything in this rampage for more wealth, more greed. If you want to talk about blind greed, that's what we're getting. That's exactly what we're getting. And then you look at some of the crazy stuff coming out of the Obama White House. And I got to tell you, it's beyond any kind of belief. Because I just wrote a couple of articles for CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. And one article that I wrote, my most recent one, title of my article was Border Patrol Stripping Agents of Rifles. I kid you not. You have Border Patrol agents on the border, and they were told that their rifles were defective. Well, I remember, as an INS agent, one of the advantages that I have in discussing these issues is that because of my background as an agent, I've been there and seen it myself. I know how things operate. I know exactly how things operate. And so what we realized very quickly early on is that the situation that these agents are in is that their weapons were being taken from them by their own bosses. And instead of saying to them, hey, listen, you can turn in your weapons and we'll replace them. I mean, you don't think the Border Patrol could go to the military, which gives the same types of rifles to the military, replace them? Or have an armorer go to the Border Patrol sectors and fix the rifles on the scene? Because the repairs that needed to be made weren't all that complicated. So instead they said, oh, we're just going to take your rifles. We'll bring them back maybe sometime in the future. And if you can, share a couple of guns. Well, rifles have to be sighted in. So you have guys swapping guns back and forth. It affects their accuracy. There's a shortage of weapons. How on earth do you put your men and women out there in harm's way along a very violent, dangerous border and not do everything you could possibly do to keep them safe? How can anybody, but I mean anybody, justify this? It doesn't make any bloody sense. And they're doing it to these agents. And if you look at what happened to Ramos and Compey under the Bush administration, they were defending themselves. I truly believe that they didn't believe, number one, that they had struck the drug dealer, and that, number two, I believe that they were convinced that he was about to fire on them. And they wound up losing their jobs, getting criminally prosecuted, going to jail for doing their jobs. So if you want to talk about standing by yourself in the middle of nowhere, that's where our Border Patrol agents are. I certainly would not want to be an ICE or an HSI agent today, because you know that the government that puts you in harm's way is not going to stand with you. We're putting our people in a precarious position. We're not supporting the men and women upon whom we depend for public safety and national security. So you've got the Obama administration on the one hand doing that. On the other hand, I wrote another article about the sanctuary cities and who is being served and who's being protected, going back to this idea about police departments around the country using that motto, to serve and to protect. Who's being served and who's being protected when you have sanctuary cities that prevent local law enforcement from notifying immigration authorities when they have a suspected illegal alien in custody or a criminal alien in custody? Now, you need to know, of course, that the Obama administration is coming out with more regulations and saying to their people, well, a guy that gets arrested for drunk driving isn't deportable. The guy that was just arrested once or twice for a robbery or something, well, that doesn't sound like a serious crime. Instead of saying, look, this is what the law says. This is what the law says. If you've been convicted of this type of a crime or that type of a crime within this time frame and so forth, you become deportable. The president is rewriting the immigration laws. And he made that statement in response to hecklers when he said, I change the law. I change the law. The Constitution instructor. I change the law. Where in the Constitution does it say that the President of the United States has the authority to legislate laws or change laws? Yes, he can issue executive orders to make certain that the laws are effectively enforced. He can establish priorities. But that wasn't what he said. I changed the law. So you have Obamacare incentivizing the hiring of illegal aliens who get temporary status based on nothing but a presidential whim, a presidential caveat. And you have a president who tells the people at Homeland Surrender, we're going to do everything we can to ignore convictions that aliens may have so that they can stay here. We're told this is about compassion. Compassion. What about compassion to be shown for Americans? You know, when you look at the plight of America's minorities and you look at the helplessness and the hopelessness that goes on in those tough neighborhoods, as an agent, I can't tell you how many days I spent in some really terrible situations. Walk into buildings and see rats the size of cats running through the hallway. Knock on a door, and they open the door, and there are bugs everywhere. We used to call it the moving wall. You couldn't even see the paint on the wall. Children waking up in their beds with bugs, going to bed hungry at night, bullets whistling by their windows, or occasionally coming in through the window. At least once a week you hear of a story of a child in the street getting shot because a couple of idiots were shooting guns at each other. You know, there's a big debate raging right now about minimum wage, and I'm inclined to raise minimum wages, and I know my conservative friends and I have a disagreement, and we can have that disagreement. And again, I keep emphasizing it. Let's keep those communication lines open. Let's keep having conversations. One of the things that few people recognize, by the way, you're welcome to think about it or contact me about it, but nobody lives on $10 an hour in the United States today. That's a mythology. If someone is getting a $10 an hour paycheck, they're getting food stamps and other subsidies. The less you earn, the bigger the subsidy. So one way or the other, people are paying to sustain these people. And so it comes out of somebody's pocket. I would rather that the paycheck be bigger and the benefits be smaller to incentivize work so that someone doesn't say, oh, the money that I'm going to make on the job is negligible. No, the money should be the way people support themselves. I mean, I never in my life took a nickel of any kind of, you know, of money to supplement my income. I can't even imagine what that would be like. But if you're in that situation, then the job, I would imagine, isn't as important as if you were purely living off of your paycheck. We have to incentivize success. But I also want you to understand that kids who live in poverty, filth, violence, want to get out. No rational person wants to live in those tenements where you can smell, as one of my partners and so inelegantly referred to it, as the stench of poverty. They want out. And the question isn't what they're willing to do to get out, but what won't they do to get out? And if the best you can offer somebody is even the $15 an hour minimum wage, that doesn't get you out of poverty, folks, especially in major cities. Lots of luck on $15 an hour in New York City. That works out to a little over $30,000 a year. You can't support a family on that in New York City. You can't support a single person on that in New York City. We need to provide opportunities and incentives for kids to get out of poverty. But look at what we're doing. Through the importation of ever more foreign workers, and now the number's going to go through the roof. And by the way, in the beginning, I said that it's probably going to be a lot more than 5 million. Here's why. Reagan's amnesty was supposed to involve 1 million. It wound up involving almost 4 million. What if the same thing happens now with Obama? What if this turns into 20 million? Then what? Then what? Remember, the Obama administration just ordered up 34 million green cards. 34 million. And when they pressed press secretary, I forget his first name, but his last name is Ernest. Boy, there's a name for that guy, Ernest, Mr. Ernest. And he said, well, we're not going to discuss office supplies. Green cards aren't rubber bands and paper clips. They aren't office supplies. But look at what we've done. Americans are losing their jobs, and not just at the bottom but on these high-tech jobs that used to be well-paying, good, solid jobs that you could really build a life around. They're not getting hired or they're being fired. So many American kids are winding up with student loans that look like mortgage payments. And with the exception of people like Jeff Sessions and my friend Lou Barletta and some other really good people in Washington, both parties are applauding this. They're thrilled because they're getting campaign contributions. Gates and Zuckerberg have pumped over $1.5 billion into pushing comprehensive reform. It's the U.S. Chamber of Commerce that has pushed to increase the number of visa waiver countries. We had 26 such countries on 9/11. Now we're up to 38, even after the 9/11 Commission said that we have to tighten up the visa process. So the way we tighten up the visa process is to eliminate it? Really? Does that make any sense to anybody? And where are the parties? The political parties are kind of like heads they win, tails we lose. We can't win with the Democrats or the Republicans. They are not on the side of the average American. And the average American is so disconnected that they don't even know who's supposed to represent them in Washington, never voted, and never made a phone call. If you hired people and put them to work for you and treated them that way, what would you expect? We're absentee bosses. Okay, you got the job, go to Washington, have a nice life. This has to stop, folks. We need involvement. You cannot be a good parent if you're not involved in the political process. I look around me. I look at the disaster unfolding. I look at a president who's totally out of control and contemptuous of his fellow Americans. I mean, it's despicable. And where are the Republicans? Oh, he's violated the Constitution. Okay. But why is nobody talking about what the impact is going to be on American jobs and American families? I'll tell you why. Because I don't believe that the leaders of either political party give a rat's tail about it. It doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter. It should matter to all of us. It's important. It's very important, folks, that you start getting involved in the political process, that you hold these thugs in Washington and in state capitals and city halls across the country accountable. New York City got hammered the worst on 9/11. If ever there was a city that should be up in arms over a failure to secure the borders and enforce the laws that were identified by no less an objective body than the 9/11 Commission, warning about the way we gave out identity documents, secured our borders, and allowed aliens into the country. It's in the 9/11 Commission report. It's in the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. And you have a mayor by the name of Dumb Blasio. I don't want to sound childish and resort to this, but my rage is in the stratosphere, and I'm trying desperately to not use foul language. To propose to provide hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens with identity documents is insanity. Could you imagine going to the airport the next time you have a trip to take and scribble your name on an index card with lipstick or a magic marker and say, this is who I am? They would laugh at you. But they shouldn't be laughing. Because the system by which this idiot mayor will give ID to foreign nationals who purport to be undocumented would be no more secure than scribbling your name on an index card. Garbage in, garbage out. Yes, the cards will look real fancy and real pretty, and they'll have all kinds of safeguards and holograms and super-duper laminate and maybe Kevlar and maybe carbon fiber and an RFID chip, and it will stop a bullet at, 100 paces. But at the end of the day, if the name on the card is a fantasy, what's the point to issuing the card? It undermines public safety, it undermines national security, and it's New York City that conducts these raids along Roosevelt Avenue. There was an article about Roosevelt Avenue in the New York Times just 2 years ago about how the selling of phony ID is linked to the houses of prostitution and the narcotics and the violence, all part of this illegal alien undercurrent in that neighborhood. So they go out, the police, and they arrest people selling fake documents. Maybe they don't want competition for de Blasio's documents. We're being sold down the river. And I can't get out of my head in the days and weeks and months after 9/11, all of those politicians running up to the microphone, getting in front of the camera, using their sharp elbows to get in front of each other for that moment of glory in front of the camera. Why didn't they connect the dots? I'm going to let you in on a secret that's not a secret. May 20th, 1997, I testified before my very first congressional hearing, and the topic for that hearing was visa fraud and immigration application benefit fraud. And the incentive for that hearing were the two terror attacks carried out inside the United States in 1993. First in January, when Amil Khansi, a Pakistani national who applied for political asylum, repaid America's kindness, generosity, and compassion by standing outside CIA headquarters in Virginia with an AK-47 and opened fire. He killed two CIA officers and wounded three others and did what all these dirtbags from foreign countries can do when they come here to commit crime. Hopped on an airplane and got out of Dodge. Except in his case, because of the nature of the crime, our guys were a hell of a lot smarter than that piece of trash. They grabbed him, brought him back here, put him on trial, found him guilty. He was executed. But the people he killed remained dead. The people that he wounded remained injured. And just a month after he carried out that horrible attack, we had the first attack at the World Trade Center. Ramzi Youssef applied for political asylum and was granted asylum. Mahmoud Aboulima got agricultural amnesty, a program cobbled together, authored by, primarily, Chuck Schumer, 1986. And when I tried to meet with Schumer, because he was my congressman then, he gave me all of about 5 minutes of what was supposed to be a 15-minute meeting. And I said, do you understand that there's going to be a lot of fraud, that we're not going to know who these people are? I said, you don't even have a farm in your district. And whereupon he said to me, I think my next appointment is here and you need to leave. He greeted me with, let me tell you what I know about immigration. Did he really think I came to see him so that he could tell me what he knew? When I worked with Senator Al D'Amato to increase the penalty for reentry after deportation for criminal aliens back in 1981-82, I was upset. Reentry was a two-year crime, and they never took into account whether or not the alien had a criminal history. I said, look, 2 years in jail for a dishwasher or a farm worker is fine, but if you've got out of jail after being convicted for rape or mayhem or arson or murder or vehicular homicide, you should be looking at up to 20 years in jail. And D'Amato didn't say to me, let me tell you what I know. Al D'Amato said, Mikey, because he kept calling me Mikey, this is your life's work. I need to learn from you. But he said, I want to speak to more of your colleagues so that I'm convinced that you're not alone in your beliefs. So over a six-month period, I got 30 or so of my colleagues to go to see D'Amato's people, and D'Amato got that law passed. We did it. And my former boss and mentor, a gentleman by the name of Walter Connery, who came to the INS from the New York City Police Department, where he had been deputy inspector for internal affairs, came to immigration, initially head of internal affairs in Washington, then came to New York as the chief of investigations, unbeknownst to me and unbeknownst to him that I was involved. He had written a legislative initiative based on the fact that in addition to being a cop, he also was a lawyer. I did what I did. It was kind of a synergy there, and D'Amato got the law passed. The law is on the books, and because of that law, until this screwed-up administration, immigration criminal prosecutions became the most numerous around the country. Al D'Amato listened, and he said, your point is well taken. He actually conferred with Rudy Giuliani, who at the time was the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. But that's not how Chuck Schumer did business. Yeah, I figured if New York's senior senator would give me such a warm greeting, that I would expect the same from Chuck. Not on your life. Not on your life. So we have that 93 attack. One of the key players, Mahmoud Aboulima, got agricultural amnesty, claiming he had picked beans in Florida. Never did. And to point of fact, the closest this thug ever got to a farm was when he drove a cab by Central Park in Manhattan. So we hold this hearing, or they held this hearing in 97. I was one of the witnesses. And it was clear that we had vulnerabilities in the immigration system. And what was done about it? Bupkis. Nothing. And what was the result? September 11th, 2001. September 11th, 2001. And where are we today? Far more vulnerable. And where are the Republicans? If you want to see a politician do the twist and shout, here's the magic question. Write this one down, folks. Call your congressmen, call your senators, and just ask them a simple question. This isn't tough. Why isn't the 9/11 Commission report, why is that not the starting point for any discussion about changing immigration laws? That's all I want you to ask them. And then you could let me know what kind of reaction you get. Because most politicians, I think they would rather tell you who they're having sex with than answer that question. Because they have no valid answer to that question. They have no valid answer to that question. You call them up or you meet with them and you ask them one simple question. Why aren't you making the 9/11 Commission report the starting point for any discussion about immigration? Another great document to use is the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. It runs close to 300 pages, purely about documents and travel for the terrorists. Everything they're proposing violates the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission and the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. It's very simple. You know, you drive a stake through the heart of the vampire to kill him. That 9/11 Commission report and the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel, they're the two stakes you can drive through the heart of comprehensive reform. That was why I came to refer to it and still refer to it as being the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. Simple, fundamental, easy to remember question. Ask the question, stand back, and watch the reaction. Watch the reaction. Yes, Senator Sessions will give you a straight-up answer. Congressman Steve King will give you a straight-up answer. My good friend Lou Barletta, straight-up answer. Ask Chucky, baby, Chuck Schumer. Ask him why he wants to put people in jail for 5 years when they trespass on the Brooklyn Bridge, but give them citizenship when they trespass on America. Ask him that question if you get the opportunity, but I doubt you will. I doubt you will. See, this is not rocket science, folks. We're being lied to. We're being played like a fiddle. It's happening by most of the news media. It's happening by our politicians. And we, the people, are paying the price. If it doesn't cost us our lives, it will be costing us our jobs. It will be costing us our middle class. America's in a state of free fall, and bottom is not elusive. It's illusory. There is no bottom if we don't stop these people. We are in a race to the bottom, and we can't possibly win that race. It's always wonderful joining you at the end of the week. I wish I had good news to report to you, but the good news is that if you're listening and if you're so motivated and so dedicated to fighting back, then I hope this program provides you with perspectives, information, and ideas that you're probably not going to hear too many other places, if anywhere else at all. I ask that you please let your friends and your neighbors and all those around you know about my program, know about my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Progressives for Immigration Reform, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract. I'm out there doing whatever I can to try to deliver to you something that is becoming increasingly difficult to find. The truth. The truth. And this has to stop, folks. This must stop. And the only way that it's going to stop is if we, the people, demand it and push the issue and get the politicians to understand that we are certainly not as stupid as that they hope that we are. I ask for your efforts because we're in this together. If you have kids, if you have grandchildren, this is as much about their future as it is about anything else. Really, it is. My parents raised me to believe that I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating consistently what I would tolerate and what I would not tolerate. What is being done to us rather than for us is intolerable. And remember, this isn't about left or right. It's about right or wrong. Separate immigration from all the other issues. This has nothing to do with abortion or school prayer or the Second Amendment. and I know everybody has strong feelings about those other issues, but this is an area that every American can agree on. And we need to get every American under our umbrella, under the tent, with us, to fight with us against those who are doing such incredible damage to our nation and to the future of our citizens. I once wrote a piece where I referred to these thugs as being the fences. In law enforcement, the fence is someone who sells stolen property. That's what they're doing. And one of the things that they're stealing from us is the future of our children and their children. And we are all that stands between them and what they are trying to achieve. I really appreciate all that you do out there to make a difference. And by the way, in case you have this notion that I'm just one person, you know, what can I do? Think about how the history books are written. Think about the American Revolution or the First World War or the Second World War or the space program, any great achievements. You only think about a few names. When you think about the Revolution, you can name maybe a dozen names that come to mind about the founding of America. How many people were involved? Just a few names really ring out. Go to the park. See those statues of people on horseback. Those statues were erected because that one person made all the difference at a critical moment in history. That's what it's about, making a difference. We all have that potential to make a difference when it counts. Don't sell yourself short. Let's work as a team, and let's make certain that we get this country back on track. The elections are coming in 2 years, faster than you could imagine. The politicians are going to be gearing up within the next few weeks, believe it or not. You're going to start to see the battles begin. Let's make sure that this issue of immigration, border security, leads the charge. And remember, this isn't about being anti-immigrant. Don't ever allow anybody to define you. As I said when I spoke in Washington at that event for Progressives for Immigration Reform, that's rule number one. You must never, ever allow your enemy to define you. It is not anti-immigrant to support the laws under which this country, the United States of America, admits more lawful immigrants than the rest of the world combined. We naturalize more new citizens each year than the rest of the world combined. How on earth can it be anti-immigrant to support the laws under which aliens legally immigrate? It's another one of the lies. Just the way that we're told that the term alien is a terrible word. It simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. It's a lie to say that this is an N-word. It's not. You're not insulting anybody. It's a statement of fact. What is disturbing to the open borders anarchists is that that word alien provides clarity. And when you're trying to con people, when you're trying to hoodwink people, when you're trying to swindle people, the last thing you want is clarity. For entertainment purposes, magicians use blue smoke and mirrors and tricky lighting and elaborate hand gestures and all kinds of other little tricks, including a couple of real good-looking gals wearing skimpy little outfits, so you don't even know where to look. That's for entertainment, but it's about distraction and misdirection. The same thing here. It's the same game here, folks. This is a deception. When you see through it, suddenly you have clarity. And when you have clarity, you realize that our country's first and last line of defense against international terrorists, against transnational criminals, against aliens who one way or another would be harmful to the well-being and security and safety of America and Americans, are our borders and immigration laws. You're being sold a lie that there's something wrong with enforcing those immigration laws. Schumer wants people who trespass prosecuted. So do I. But let's remember that when aliens run our borders, they're trespassing on America. That when aliens lie on their applications for visas, they're committing a felony. It's very simple. It's very clear. Don't let that blue smoke get in the way of the truth. I thank you so much for tuning in this evening. I hope all of you have a terrific weekend coming up, and I look forward to seeing all of you, or at least speaking with all of you, next week, same time, same place, right here in the Michael Cutler Hour. Meanwhile, please remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Good night, everybody.